argued that these changes affected terms and conditions of employment and were therefore subject to good faith negotiation. The Education Association further alleged that the board retaliated against the president of the Education Association by filing tenure charges when he publicly advocated against the new security policies. The board argued that it had managerial prerogatives to implement security measures and noted that it had withdrawn the tenure charges. The board further argued that there was a lack of jurisdiction over the matter, and there was an issue, written decision finding that the board had prerogative to implement the new security measures, but ruling that it failed to identify the need for installing those measures where staff congregated and expected privacy. There was also ruling that tenure charges were improper because the board had given rise to the inference of a dual motive. So that, there obviously seemed to be a dual motive when these charges were brought against the association president. So on appeal, the court affirmed, and this was affirmed. The appellate division said that the PERC PERC could assert exclusive jurisdiction over complaints arising under the, Employer-Employee Relations Act, and to rule that the association, they had exclusive jurisdiction to rule the association had the right to engage in good faith negotiations over the installation of audiovisual surveillance cameras in those places that would impact the terms and conditions of staff and teachers' employment. So this is obviously not all over, but that the staff had some rights to privacy. Now, the court did rule that the trial court lacked jurisdiction to enforce the order, and instead the court held that only the PERC is Public Employment Relations Commission, only the Public Employment Relations Commission could file a motion with the court to enforce its own orders entered pursuant to the Employer-Employee Relations Act. As you can see, there are all kinds of abbreviations and acronyms in court decisions. But in this case, this was approved, and it sends a signal, more than a signal, it should, to all of the boards of education as to what would be proper and what would not be proper. And these are good guidance, and frankly, boards that act contrary to these legal decisions are asking for litigation and spending a lot of our taxpayers' money. So, end of show. Sorry I went over a bit. We'll play the news and then come back with the sports guys.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News.
We have our senior leaders meeting all across the world with people that we have deep disagreements with. It is incredibly valuable to the people of the United States of America that President Putin and President Trump continue to engage in dialogue to resolve the difficult issues that our countries face between each other. I think this makes enormous sense, and I'm very hopeful that that meeting will take place this fall.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo outside the United Nations holding a brief press conference talking about President Trump's plans to invite Russian President Vladimir Putin to Washington this fall. The town of Branson, Missouri, is still in shock today after 17 people were killed when a duck boat packed with tourists capsized last night due to high winds. Jim Patterson is a president of Ripley Entertainment. He says this duck boat never should have been in the water.
No, it shouldn't have been in the water if what happened happened.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
Okay, so the big question for any decision you're going to make, is this actually going to work? Well, if you've heard about MediShare, which is a brilliant way of sharing healthcare costs, you may have wondered that. Does it work? Well, so did Dr. Stuart Hoover, who initially joined to save a lot of money. The typical family saves about $500 a month. Stuart saved even more.
When we first joined MediShare, we were immediately going from a little over $1,600 a month down to $460 basically a month.
So that's wonderful. But then his wife needed emergency surgery and the bills added up to $160,000.
So we were seeing the bills coming in and then the bills were being paid. Portions were being shared, and the end result of this is this bill was taken care of.
Yes, MediShare works, and it's so easy to get your questions answered too, so why not? You can call right now, 833-39-BIBLE. That's 833-39-BIBLE, 833-39-BIBLE.
A financial expert says never blindly trust your bank. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has more.
As Wells Fargo's in the news again, having agreed to refund tens of millions of dollars to customers who bought add-on services they didn't really get or didn't really understand, from identity theft protection to pet insurance, Bankrate.com Chief Financial Officer Greg McBride does have some advice for banking customers.
We have to be very vigilant looking at our accounts or reviewing our transactions, making sure that you're not getting dinged for monthly fees. Make sure that you cancel, or if you see a fee you don't recognize, get on the horn and complain about it immediately.
He was speaking to NBC News. He notes Wells Fargo is not the only big bank to be plagued by problems with add-ons recently. Bank of America and Citigroup have been facing similar allegations.
And your final numbers on Wall Street for the week. The Dow lost 6 points to close the week at 25,058. This is USA Radio News.
Hey, Charlie Jones here. I've been sleeping on a MyPillow now for 10 weeks, and I'm telling you, my sleep has improved dramatically. So what are you waiting for? Jump on board and start experiencing the kind of restorative sleep you need in your life. And if you're waiting for a better offer, your wait is over, because MyPillow just brought back their best offer ever. It's their buy one, get one free special. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the buy one, get one free special, use my code USA, and get one free pillow when you buy one at regular price. That's MyPillow.com, click on the buy one, get one free special, and enter promo code USA.
According to two sources, former CIA Director John Brennan still has top-secret government security clearance. With the security clearance, Brennan has the power to view classified government documents, discuss classified topics, and also view highly personal information on American citizens. Senator Rand Paul was asked about it on Fox News.
Now, this is alarming, and if John Brennan still has top-secret clearance, can he research Donald Trump? Can he research his family? Can he type my name into computer search engines? Can he look at all of my information? It's alarming. If he has top secret clearance, as unhinged as he is now, calling the president treasonous, saying basically that he's for, you know, the death penalty for the president. Yeah, it's alarming. If he has security clearance, it's absolutely alarming.
Senator Paul also makes another point regarding Brennan.
Well, you know, John Brennan has a history of leaking information already,
right?
Not only for political reasons, but a few years ago, he linked that there was an inside informant in Yemen while that person was still on the inside in Yemen. He put that person's life at risk. They all backpedaled, and they had to rescue someone out of Yemen who was at the heart of an Al-Qaeda, you know, project trying to discover what Al-Qaeda's plans were in Yemen. But John Brennan leaked their name. So he's got a history of having a problem with leaking. Head of the CIA, who in their right mind would want to let him have the power still to search through everybody's records?
That audio courtesy of Fox News. And for USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Well, good afternoon. It's the sports guys. But first of all, let me tell you something about the weather, since all sports people are interested. Doesn't look like this is going to be a great weekend, either, Bill, for your sailing, if you're going to do it. I think tomorrow's the day to try, although, as we know, the weather at the shore is always different. Outside tennis, doesn't look great. So what's happening? Today they said it was hazy, although I have to tell you, I thought it was really sunny. I didn't think it was overcast. And so that's the other thing with the weather. You never know. However, tonight, mostly clear. Tomorrow, there's a slight chance of showers in the morning, and then about a 60% chance later in the day. So the fact is, let's get out there early in the morning, because we should have, the showers, but mainly after 3 p.m. Then into tomorrow night, there's about a 90% chance of rain. And then, unfortunately, about a 90% chance of showers on Sunday. And then about a 50% chance of thunderstorms. Sunday night, showers likely. And Monday, again, about a 70% chance of showers. And into Monday night, and then possible showers on Tuesday. So this looks like a week that those of us who have had grass drying up, it will certainly get enough rain. Now, one of the things that I came out of Newark on, Tuesday. I don't know. Whatever the day of that horrible storm. And one of the things about thunderstorms here, you really have to worry about flooding. I mean, that came down so fast. It was really dangerous driving. There was so much rain that you really couldn't even, I think that was yesterday, could not even see the taillights of the driver ahead of you. So in any event, that's the weather, and we're here, Bill and I. So, Bill, are you going down to your boat this weekend?
Well, Pat, it's 5 o'clock somewhere, and that somewhere is right here, Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce Internet Radio. And I'm going to try to get down to my boat again in between the raindrops because I've got some new equipment I still haven't had a chance to test out. Do you know that I think King Neptune is playing games with me, because it's, during the work week, it's gorgeous. If I have to go to court, the sun is shining, it's beautiful, it's hot. If I have to go from meeting to meeting, it's just a beautiful summer day. But if I want to get out on my boat, it's like a storm of biblical proportion. And if I had a lot of animals, I'd probably look like Noah getting on the ark.
Well, listen, we're going to play a couple spots from our sponsors. And then I want to come back. And, of course, the Hall of Fame is in the news. And
well, why don't you tell us which Hall of Fame?
Well, come on. You know me. It has to be the NFL Hall of Fame.
The Football Hall of Fame.
Which
now that we've got that settled, I'd let you play some ads, and then we can listen to
what
you have
to say. Well, of course, you know, they announced the 8 inductees back in February, but, of course, why is it in the news now? Well, stay tuned and we'll talk about it. No, there's a reason.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Are you struggling to find the right person to stay in that critical role in your company? Trying to attract and retain millennials? Regional Personnel is your staffing solution. Located in Lebanon, New Jersey, Regional Personnel is an ASA-certified, privately held staffing and recruiting firm providing you with everything from temporary to permanent employees. As ASA-certified professionals, we employ the latest tools and techniques to find, screen, and present to you the best talent that fits your needs. The result? Access to top talent in the shortest time with the lowest chance of turnover. We guarantee it. So call Regional today at 908-534-8113 or visit us on the web at regionalpersonnel.com.
This is Tony Clark, Para Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody out there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know? The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in. Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Well, Bill, we're back, and I know we want to talk about the World Cup, but the reason that the Hall of Fame, the induction, of course, is going on in August, and the reason, of course, it's in the news now, everybody found out back in February who the eight honorees are going to be and the new inductees, but, of course, now the latest is that Terrell Owens says that he doesn't plan on showing up. And so there's, you know, there's all the controversy about Terrell Owens once again, and now it's that he's not going to show up for the induction.
I have a question, Pat.
Yes.
Why does anybody care about Terrell Owens?
I have to tell you, I don't know. And when we talk more about this, of course, I've actually thought of going to this because someone that I believe should have been inducted years ago is going to be inducted.
And who is that?
And that is Jerry Kramer.
Oh.
He was on the offensive line. We'll talk more about him at some point. I remember him, and I think the reason why he wasn't inducted years ago is that there were so many of the Lombardi players of the that were inducted, the Packers.
Lombardi era Packers, sure.
And so I think that was the reason why a few years ago, of course, Dave Robinson was inducted. I thought it was like 2 or 3 years ago, but I think it might have been 5 years ago. So I'm sure that Jerry Kramer, you know, if he has to crawl, he will be there. And, you know, I was happy and expected Brett Favre to go in, but the fact that Jerry Kramer is finally getting, you know, this is something that he really deserved. He deserved years ago, and no one could really understand why he wasn't inducted except that so many of his teammates were. But in any event, we'll talk more about that at some point. We could talk about Wimbledon, but let's wait until John gets here. And
he's a tennis guy, but you know, I have a question, Pat. How many Lombardi era Packers actually are in the Hall of Fame?
I will tell you at some point, but right now, why don't we talk a little bit about the World Cup?
Okay.
I watched the final match the entire thing. I missed one goal. I think I had to go out and get some food for somebody.
Was that the one where France kicked the ball off of a Croatian defender and it went in?
No, that one I saw.
I saw that one too, but in a replay. I enjoyed the game. I thought France was not the better team, but yet they still managed to score more goals. I thought the Croatians played their heart out. They seem to have dominated the possession time.
Oh, I think there's no question that they dominated.
And they certainly dominated being in the French defensive zone. The Croatians went on the attack. They have some wonderful players. I wish I knew more about soccer and the rules because it would have added to my appreciation of what was a very interesting soccer game. And
well,
I'm not a big soccer fan.
No, I'm not.
Good game.
I'm not either, but you know what is always fun is when there are a lot of goals. And also the fact that it didn't just come down to 0-0 down to the end and then have, sudden death,
kicks.
What I call sudden death.
Well, I don't like penalty kicks. I don't mind the sudden death of an extra 10 minutes or additional time. I don't mind that because that's sort of fair. The penalty kicks, though, are the things that kind of irritate me. I don't like it in hockey, well, obviously because my favorite team is so bad at it. But more importantly, I recognize games have to end. There has to be a winner. There has to be a loser. And the fans have to go home with a result, and the teams have to move on.
Well, I don't know. You know, the interesting thing is at a World Cup or – well, maybe not so much at a Super Bowl, but at a World Cup, would it be so bad if two teams played and it was a tie? I mean, you know, it would really mean, I mean, I think that although people who didn't listen or watch the game, probably thought France was so much better because it was a 4-2 score in the end. But in effect, you're right, the Croatian team seemed to have the ball much more often. I just really thought that they were going to win. Maybe it was interesting. Dave and I were both rooting for Croatia, and our grandson Jake was rooting for France. So I guess maybe I wanted the underdog in this case to win. But then France hasn't won for, what, a zillion years? I mean, when
France
was the last
time? France
hasn't
won in the last 12 years. I think the last time they won
12?
May have been longer than that. It may have been in the late 80s. Again, I'm not a soccer fan, and I don't really follow the sport, but I think the World Cup is particularly exciting because so many nations get to compete in it, and they get down to a final 16, and then it gets very exciting. Kudos to the British team, even though they finished out of the top three. They went a whole lot deeper than anybody thought, and I think there'll be a team to be reckoned with the next time around. I am not a big fan of soccer. As I said before, I don't follow it often, but this year was particularly exciting because Croatia went to the finals, which I think was a first for them since ever, because they used to be part of Yugoslavia. Secondly, it's nice to see a small country go so deep into the World Cup. That's exciting.
Oh, absolutely. And, of course, France got in because they beat Uruguay. And Uruguay had a really excellent team. So I thought that match could have gone either way. I really did, too.
Uruguay played an excellent game. Again, Uruguay, a small South American country, but very passionate about soccer. People talk about how passionate the Brazilians are about soccer. I think Uruguay can hold their own with them, even though they're a much smaller country. But the one thing that's always intrigued me is just how passionate Brazilians are about soccer. I know a couple of people from Brazil, and you cannot pry them away when their team is playing. In fact, they subscribe to some special Brazilian soccer-only TV channel, and they get hot and cold running soccer 24/7 about the Brazilian teams. I guess they're as passionate about their teams, Pat, as you are about your football team, or I am about mine.
Oh, I think all of the, well, maybe not all of the Latin American countries, but even a country as small as Guatemala, I mean, they had rabid fans. And, of course, the Belgians, they beat Brazil 2-1, which...
A major shocker for every Brazilian.
Well, I think it definitely was. And, the Belgium, as I recall, has never won a World Cup, and Brazil has. Right?
That's true. I don't remember Belgium ever winning a World Cup, but I'm not the authority here. Meanwhile, we should talk about what's going on at Yankee Stadium this weekend. The Subway Series resumed with the Yankees hosting the New York Mets. And, you know, the New York Mets have hit a big milestone, Pat. They managed to have 55 losses before the All-Star break. This is the most in franchise history since they lost 60 games at the All-Star break in 1993. The Yankees have also hit a milestone. Didi Gregorius joined Derek Jeter and old-time shortstop Frank Perseti as the only shortstops in franchise history to post double-digit home runs and steals before the All-Star break. Now, we know how the All-Star game shook out. The American League won. I don't enjoy All-Star games. I think they're a welcome break in the middle of the baseball season, but I don't get a kick out of them.
Well, I'm surprised you say that. I would think anyone who's a real baseball fan, I'm not. So the reason that I don't really usually enjoy the games is I don't know the individual players. But the one thing I will say is that the All-Star baseball game, you know, seems to be a real game. Not seems to. I think it's a real game. Whereas, you know, the Pro Bowl is kind of like, you know, so what? I mean, nobody wants to get hurt. Nobody seems to be playing very hard. And so I really think there's a big difference between All-Star baseball and, you know, pro football.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you there. The All-Star baseball game does actually seem like a real game. But again, these guys don't want to play that hard. They don't want to get hurt in either sport. And there's a skills competition, just like there is in the NHL All-Star game. But I find it to be more of a manufactured event than anything else, particularly with football. I think it's to take up that week between the end of the playoff season and the Super Bowl. And the problem that I've always had with the NFL All-Star game is everybody seems to be going through the motions. I think they just want the free trip to Hawaii.
Well, of course, now they're not playing in Hawaii.
Where are they playing now?
Aren't they playing in Florida?
I'm sorry. I'm sure they play someplace warm.
I don't think they're playing in... I'm almost positive they're not playing.
Meanwhile, let's talk more about baseball, because I see Manny Machado went to the Dodgers for a whole pile of minor leaguers that will make the Orioles better in a year or two. The Mets are still hanging on to their two best pitchers, Jacob DeGrom and Noah Syndergaard, and I don't think either of these guys are going to get moved because they're the core around which the Mets can manage to build a team. Maybe they'll move Steve Matz, maybe not. Hopefully the Mets will pick it up a little bit. I hate to see a New York team do badly. I will tell you that the Yankees are getting Gleyber Torres back on Monday to face the Rays after his injury. Gary Sanchez returns tonight as a catcher to bolster an already very deep Yankee lineup. We have an interesting situation here. I think we're going to see plenty of home runs, but not a lot of speed on the bases. Brett Gardner is the only everyday player for the Yankees who hasn't missed time with injury and who doesn't have double-digit home runs. I think he only has 9. The infield defense is going to be interesting for the Mets. This is a real problem for them. They've been trying to field a team with their disabled list listed with everyday players. They're all over. If Dominic Smith can survive at first, that's great, but Wilmer Flores seems to be getting the bulk of the playing time for the Mets. The Yanks defense takes a hit when Gleyber Torres and Tyler Wade are not playing second. In the outfield, the Yankees get their best
guys, Gardner in left, Hicks in center, and Aaron Judge in right, with Giancarlo Stanton, one of my favorite Yankees this year, as a DH. The Mets still continue to struggle to come up with a center fielder because Conforto is a better corner outfielder than he is in center. On the bench, Sanchez back. Austin Romaine returns to his backup role as catcher. Tyler Wade will provide some speed off the bench. Jose Bautista, Jose Reyes, and Flores should all be bench players for the Mets, but often they end up plugged into the lineup because Bruce and Todd Frazier are injured. On the mound, if the Mets are serious about rebuilding, they want to keep all three of their starters, Syndergaard, Mats, and DeGrom. The Yankees are going to start Sonny Gray. We think the Yankees are going to add a starter because Sonny Gray and Masahiro Tanaka are question marks tonight. We're going to see Domingo German appear for the Yankees. He's a right-hander. He's 2-5, and he's got a 5.49 earned run average. I think we're going to see German in the bullpen as soon as the Yankees pull a deal for a starting pitcher, and I'm hopeful, very hopeful, that they can find a way to make a deal with Texas, because guess what? Former Philly is out there and would just love to be a Yankee, Pat.
Have no idea.
Well, he took the Phillies to the World Series against the Yankees in 08, and he has the ability to really turn the Yankee starting rotation into a much better game, even though he's not quite as fast a pitcher anymore. He's become a real decent third or fourth man in the startup. So I'll let you ponder that for a moment, but we've got some good baseball coming up, and I'd like to tell everybody, even though we may end up with a rainout or two, I think that there are an awful lot of guys out there who could help the Yankees. First of all, Cole Hamels, who I was hoping you'd guess, is probably going to be the best of the guys who are out there that I think are not going to be too pricey for the Yanks, because the Yanks, having the best farm system, in my opinion, is going to be in a situation where he is going to find... the Texas Rangers are really going to have to pick the Yanks' pocket to be willing to let this guy go, because Cole Hamels is an excellent, excellent pitcher. The real problem that I see, Texas is 41-56. They're not going anywhere. Hamels is getting a little older. He has a huge contract. And we will see where this goes, because it's very interesting trading season coming up. And as you know, the trade deadline is not far off. It's the 31st of this month. We are going to see an awful lot of activity, I think, right at the end, as teams realize they're going nowhere or they really need to get and go somewhere. So where's the value here? I know a lot of people are talking about whether there are some underdogs out there who are going to come alive. You look at the standings. The Red Sox seem to be running away with it. Once again, they're 9-1. They're having the same kind of last 2 months like the Mets had the first month, where the Mets went 11-1 and looked like world beaters. But unfortunately, you know what's happened with the Mets. We have the Yankees 4.5 behind, and they've faded as their pitching has begun to show the warts, and they've had their share of injuries. The interesting team to me in this mix is Seattle. Seattle is only 5 games back of Houston in the American League West, and they are the second wild card team after the New York Yankees. The difficulty that I see is, you know, a wild card game is one game and one game only, so you play for all the marbles, and what happens with the wild card game is, you know, you could have a bad couple of innings. One of the Yankee pitchers could blow up and pitch a bad game, and a Sonny Gray-esque game, although he did pitch well the last time. The other thing I'd like to point out to everybody is
there's some excitement in the NL standings. Again, you've got the Philadelphia Phillies, a team that came out of nowhere this year, who nobody expected to do anything in first place, trailed by Atlanta by a half a game, and the team everybody thought would burn it right up in the National League East, the Washington Nats, just 5.5 back and 5 games out of wild card contention. I mean, not over yet for them, but a very surprising situation in Washington. I don't really understand why they're not playing better. You can look at a lot of things. The pitching hasn't been what it should be. They're an overpaid and overpriced bunch, my humble opinion. But you never know. That's why they keep playing this game. And, Pat, I'm going to be stepping out for a moment because I know John Manfreda needs to get in the building.
Oh, okay. I guess they locked him out. I tell them every time not to do that. But, now I'm going to get a word in edgewise. And as I said, I was thinking about, Terrell Owens. And, come on. It's a huge honor to be inducted into the Hall of Fame, and this year, what I am so enthusiastic about is the guard Jerry Kramer from the Packers, from the Lombardi era, is finally, after what, 43, 45 years, is finally being inducted, and actually should have been. He should have been inducted in the Hall of Fame years ago, and I think the fact that he wasn't is inducted before the class of 2018 is that so many of the Lombardi Packers were inducted. But guess who's just joined us?
And ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, a real John Manfreda sighting. And here he is, straight from Wimbledon and the tennis courts, John Manfreda, at least from his TV.
Well, good afternoon, Bill and Pat. Thanks. Nice to be here. And, it was, at a minimum, a good Wimbledon tournament. But it's always the pageantry and pride and history and legacy that's associated with that tournament that gives it something special. So, unfortunately, we wound up with a final between Djokovic and Anderson that was kind of a mismatch. Djokovic being a pure power player, Anderson really not belonging there, handle Joker's serve.
How did Anderson get there? I mean, that
he
was
got
really
there,
surprising.
He played well, but he, so much of literally the luck of the draw is what happens. You have a draw and you happen to be paired with certain opponents who might even be ranked a little higher than you, but your style complements them very well, so you're successful in that match. And I think what happened was when Federer and Nadal went down, they ran out of gas. Well, this is the big controversy.
I really thought that Federer would once again.
Was perfect until he ran into the quarterfinal. And what happened is a lot of these guys run out of gas. And a big controversial point right now is whether to play more tie breaks rather than let these fifth sets go on and on forever. And at this point, there's a split of opinion on that. A lot of the purists like to see them play it out. You have to win it by 2 games,
right,
not just 2 points and a tie break. So what that does to the older players is it's a heavier tax on them over the course of a lengthy 2-week tournament. So
on the other hand, it gives some of the younger up-and-coming players a real chance.
Well, correspondingly, that's correct.
And
here with Anderson, who's not a young player, he was perhaps playing a little beyond his own ability. But the major thing was Djokovic has a big weapon in his serve, and Anderson just did not. He was just not able to control the serve, often not even able to return it. And on many points when he did, he couldn't attack the serve, so he was fighting it off to return it, and then Djokovic had a pretty easy 1 or 2 shot volley to put it away. Because the whole point of the serve is to disarm your opponent such that even if he returns it, it's an easy put away.
Right.
That's the idea. And Djokovic was able to do that a lot. There were so many shots, so many unforced errors that really weren't unforced. They were the response on Anderson's part to just extremely heavy volleys by Djokovic, who's a power player. The reason I didn't think Djokovic would even get past Nadal is because he's coming off an injury. I didn't think that at that stage, he in his comeback, that he was able to physically do that. So it goes to show what a tremendous athlete Djokovic is and his resolve to win.
Right. And of course, in the women, usually Serena with her serve, you know, she can put away the competition. So, really, that was, to me, a surprise that...
It's amazing the sum that she made it as far as she did. I think most people figured she could, not waltz, but pretty well go comfortably into the quarterfinals. But when she got into the finals, it was like, wow, this is a tremendous person who 10 months ago had a baby. And it just, again, it's a testament to what a phenomenal athlete she is, was able to get that far. But, you know, she lost to a player who was, you know, world-class competition. If they played the best of seven days, you know, seven matches, who knows? Maybe Serena would have won out. But on any, kind of like the NFL, Pat, on any given day... any given Sunday for the NFL. But so, Bill, does that address some of your questions, or do you have other questions on the Wimbledon and now the upcoming U.S. Open, which is only
also,
a few weeks away?
What, you know, because honestly, I didn't really know much about the German player who won. And did Serena have – who had the advantage on grass? I guess that's always my question.
I think that was probably – fairly much a wash, I think, as between those two players, because they're both power hitters. So in a power game, I don't think the grass is going to be as influential in the outcome.
So if they were playing, do you have any predictions if they were playing, same two players, women, were playing at the U.S. Open?
Well, I think you'd have hard courts on the U.S. Open. I would take Serena into those circumstances, I think, just because the power game is going to react. The ball hits and has a tremendous response off the surface. So I think Serena is always going to be your favorite because she's so powerful. She gets so much behind the shot, so such athleticism that often produces – you know, just a big spring on the ball.
I've often thought for those of you who are older, would remember Martina and Bobby Riggs, I've often wondered what would happen with...
Actually, that was Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs. You said...
I meant Billie Jean. I'm sorry.
But you know...
I meant Billie Jean King, but I'd wonder how that would work if it was someone like Serena against a player...
It's been said that Serena could compete into the top 10 in the men's draw. Yeah, I think that's fairly, maybe perhaps not officially talked about by players. I think the average informed student of the game would perhaps opine that Serena could certainly be in the top 20.
Well, and some of her first serves are just unbelievable.
Well, you know, you're looking...
Could you respond, could you hit, if she, one of her good first serves, could you return it?
No, it'd be 130 miles an hour. Yeah. I couldn't see it, let alone hit it. Unless it were straight in front of me, but even then I might not get my racket up. I mean, when I play, the average serve is about 95 miles an hour. So you're looking at a 50%... faster serve.
Yeah, and often, I mean, it's pretty general that she's serving at least 115 miles an hour.
Yeah, no question about that. You know, and I think that you're looking at a serve that, you know, unless you are incredibly athletic, because remember, your opponent is serving away from you, either towards your forehand, towards your backhand, or straight down the middle. Because those are the three
right.
toughest. Actually, for me, right straight down the middle is the hard, quick serve where you don't have time to reposition your body to get it in position to hit. Because the whole thing in tennis is to have the same stroke every time, the same impact, to adjust your body to the ball so that your racket impacts the ball, you know, three and a half feet off the ground every time. So you've got to get to the ball, and you've got to position yourself so that your swing will hit it level and transfer the maximum energy. So somebody like Serena could hit 130 mile an hour serve right down the middle. There's no way, even professional, most professional players can't react to it. But no, it would be, it'd be an honor to just try to receive it. I'd be afraid of the ball bouncing up and hitting me in the face before I could react.
Well, so how about Bill and I were talking a little bit about the World Cup. Did you watch any of that?
Not really, Pat.
Okay. Well, I watched Croatia and France. I mean, it was really, even for a non-soccer enthusiast, it was really a good...
I go to a soccer game about once every 10 years and enjoy it and then say, okay, now I'm good for 10 years. That's just my personal bias because I was brought up in a culture that glorifies American sports.
Well, of course.
And that's what it is. It's a totally different arena, literally and figuratively.
But
and
they're amazing.
They're tremendous athletes. There's no question about it.
Unbelievable. Especially, you know, if you're watching... And somehow it was amazing to me where you think they're kicking and they don't know who they're kicking to, but boy, they know every single
See,
time
I think the biggest problem
is on the field.
The biggest problem with soccer, I think the closest analogy would be basketball because you're handling the ball with your hands as opposed to your feet, but you have a ball. There's no bat. There's no, you can't hit anybody. I mean, opposite of football, there's limited contact, although there is contact. But the difference, I think, for me, in basketball, you're working towards getting a shot off to the hoop, whereas the problem I have with soccer is it's such a large field that, and this just reflects my ignorance of the game, but when a player has the ball at midfield, let's say, or even a little bit inside the midline, you know, you're looking at a bunch of ping pong moves to try to get the ball in position to score, as opposed to, say, a basketball player who can, you know, try to hit a long jumper or, you know, go around his defender and go in and score. And as an American, I like to see scoring.
But what about hockey?
Well, hockey, again, you've got a stick. And you shoot the puck.
Well,
okay,
true.
So there's action you don't get in a soccer game. You're right. The average hockey game only has a few more goals. Well, look at an all-star hockey game, Bill. 15-13 one time.
Right.
I mean, because there was no hitting. So now they allow minimal hitting. But the point of it is, I think I'm so conditioned to either seeing a baseball bat, a hockey stick, or in the case of basketball, one where... although you only have the ball and you're handling it, you're driving toward a hoop to score, and you don't need, you know, five touches all the time to work the ball in. And if, I mean, you do that in basketball, they hit the open man, that's the idea, but they'll take a shot from 40 feet or 35
right.
feet, whatever. In soccer, that's totally useless to try to hit a long shot.
But, you know, the other thing, too, is that soccer is a game where there is low scoring. There's not the speed and, I think, the ever-present overhang of violence that you see in football or in ice hockey.
Correct.
And the other thing, too, is, you know, unlike baseball, in football, in soccer, in hockey, you can score when you don't have on defense. And we see that from time to time. But see a defenseman rush up the ice.
Right.
Bobby Orr was famous for this. Grab a puck, take a pass at his own blue line, somehow manage to get through five defenders, and rip one off right through a goalie's pass. And that was a very exciting play to me. Soccer,
You're not going to see one guy dribble the ball through three or four guys
in
and take a shot and score.
However,
it's just, I've never seen it.
It's not like basketball where you have a guy who does a power drive to the hoop.
Correct. Correct.
And can
make that leap. What you do have, and if you watch that game, the conditioning of these guys.
Oh, there's no question the athleticism is there. It's the game itself.
No, I understand.
To me, if you made a soccer field maybe a third smaller, okay, instead of 100 by, was it 120 by 50 or something? If you made it like 80 by 40, you'd see a huge difference in the game. That, I mean, to me, it'd be like playing ice hockey with a rink almost twice the size. One of the reasons why you have a standard, what is it, 108 feet, Bill?
No, the an NHL rink is 190 feet. And
190 feet, 100, yeah. 100,
and interestingly, Europe, particularly in the Scandinavian leagues and in the German
They're wider.
And
it's wider.
You'll notice also in Canadian football, the field is 100
And the field is wider. Doug Flutie excelled there.
Of course, in hockey, you know, they move so quickly because they're on skates.
Right.
But it was amazing to me how few changes in players there are in soccer. I mean, they really are out there. If you look at
there's no question hockey, the best conditioned athletes in the world.
They must be. I mean,
that's not even a debate. Okay. Well, the question was about soccer itself as a game, and just being an American who is used to individual plays, scoring, and quickness, as Bill pointed out, those elements are not there for me in soccer.
Right. Well, I have to say it was fun to watch Croatia and France because it ended up 4-2. So you're absolutely right. It is more fun when there are more goals, especially if they're real goals, not just penalty kicks.
Right.
I mean, if they're goals made in play. But it was interesting. I watched the whole thing.
Well, if we could switch for a couple of minutes to baseball, we're now resuming, actually last night, resumed play after the All-Star break. Bill, what do you make of, 10 home runs in the All-Star game? I think this is reflective of, you know, the uppercut swing. These guys, they strike out more and the batting averages are lower because they're trying to hit it up. They're trying to hit it out.
But remember something. I think of All-Star games as exhibition games. People are trying to show off a little bit. The pitchers are grooving the ball, too, so that they can see how long somebody can hit a ball sometimes. It's like Mickey Mantle's last home run when Mickey Lolich told him, it's coming, better hit it. So what I see is that, batters are getting used to the fastball. In the All-Star game, they're not throwing those 103-mile-an-hour fastballs. Plus, you have pitcher after pitcher after pitcher coming in, maybe in an inning or maybe after two or three batters. And so you're getting them fresh, but batters have gotten hip to the idea that it's going to be a blazing fastball. It's going to come in at anywhere from 99 miles an hour and up. And they're going to get the fat part of the bat on the ball because you'll notice they swing a little earlier in those kinds of games.
Otherwise the ball's past them. I agree. They're swinging earlier, and they have more of an uppercut swing. They did an analysis of the angle that the average player is swinging, and it's like 2 or 3 degrees higher than it had ever been.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. And you'll notice something else, too. With more technology, players get more feedback.
Oh, the launch angle, exit speed.
All of those
analytics are available. You see it right on your TV screen.
I mean, it used to be just sabermetrics. Maybe you
Correct.
Had the same game I had as a kid.
Yeah.
You roll the dice and you find out that Juan Marichal just struck out somebody on the Cardinals, or Stan Musial. But on the other hand, you have now with computerization and the ability to analyze body mechanics as people swing or as they throw a ball, and you can analyze the path of the ball. I think batters know what's coming half the time.
Well, I think to that point, Bill, they're not sure what's coming, but they will swing to a spot. So in other words, if I want to get the fat part of the bat on the ball, I'll look for the outer third of the plate. I mean, I'm going to assume it's not coming down the middle unless the pitcher really made a mistake. But what I'll do is I'll pick a spot and I'll swing through that spot. And if the ball is there, it's gone.
Oh, no doubt about it. I think when the ball is released from the pitcher's hand at that moment, you've got about 0.2 of a second to decide where that ball is headed if you're an experienced batter and you've seen this guy pitch on tape. So you're absolutely right. Very apropos point. You are really swinging to a spot. And what you're looking to do is you're looking to get a little bit under the ball so that as you swing, you're really flicking it up into the air, almost like a badminton kind of.
So same kind of action to launch it out of the
really
park.
So what you're really talking about is they're swinging to a spot just like a quarterback is throwing
to
a spot.
Exactly right.
You know, and his, yeah. his guy's got to get there.
Right.
Talk about get there. We have to play a few more commercials, and then we'll be back.
And training camp's coming up, Pat.
One of the biggest decisions in your lifetime is buying or selling a house. Choosing a realtor with strong client communication, technology, and marketing skills will dramatically improve your chance of success. That's why Hunterdon and Somerset's residents rely on Joe Peters. Joe believes his clients deserve a smooth and seamless experience, not a roller coaster ride. As a Coldwell Banker sales associate with 20 years of experience, he's helped hundreds of people to achieve their goals and dreams, no matter where they were in the buying or selling process. Joe accomplishes this by approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, he tries to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them his own. Then he takes the mass amount of data that's available and distills it down to a few understandable action points. And finally, he controls the entire process through technology and marketing. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let Joe show you how to take his professional expertise and put it to work for you. To contact Joe, go to jpeters.com or call 908-238-0118.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR-DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you...
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Okay, guys, we're back on the air. We always have such great discussions.
We've got to talk some football. You missed the best part of the show, ladies and gentlemen. John Manfred and I were talking about the NFC East, and I said, John, I think the Giants are a 10-6 team this year.
I think they're 11-5. I think Philly probably wins the division at 12-4, but you're going to see both the Giants and the Cowboys get in. I really do. I think you're going to see the wild cards coming from the East.
Well, that could be. Even the Redskins are not a pushover, even though it's a rebuild.
They're a perennial 6-10 team that gives everybody fits and beats you up.
There's no question. And you never see the Redskins really get blown out.
No, but now without Cousins, they're going to get blown out.
Actually,
because offensively, they can't compete.
I think the NFL East may be the most
exciting. Clearly.
Exciting.
And we know the weakest division in football, the AFL East.
Right.
We know about that. AFC East.
Well, remember, I've always said this many times on this show, the New England Patriots.
No, 20 years now. The other three teams have not been a factor.
Yeah, I mean, they got the Bills. Improved, but not that much. The Jets,
but the question is, how is it that, you know, well, I guess I could look at Cleveland and say, how is it? And, of course, we can take a look at them. But, you know, it's just amazing how that 20-year run, you know, with the Patriots.
Yeah, well, look at the San Diego Chargers. They had some good teams and good talent. They haven't won anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand with Cleveland, it's just futility personified. In fact, you haven't seen such futility. If you recall the 1976 Tampa Bay Bucks were 0-16, and then they were 1-15 when they first came into the league. And that was McKay's team, and they just didn't have much talent. What's confounding about the Browns is they actually do have some talented players. And quite frankly, they're projecting in a year or two, when you've got some players hitting their fourth and fifth year, they're going to have a solid roster over there.
And then you have to look at the coaching.
And it's just a question whether they picked the right quarterback. I don't think they did. I still think the Jets probably got the best quarterback of the lot. Now, whether any of them are any good.
Sam Darnell.
And yeah. We're about to go off, guys. But, you know, one of the things that is so amazing, and we'll talk about this because, of course, Jerry Kramer is going to be inducted in the Hall of Fame.
Amazing.
He should have been inducted years
Absolutely.
Ago. And he wasn't, I think, because there were so many other Lombardi Packers.
No question.
We will be talking about that, especially since the jerk Terrell Owens is not going to show up. So anyway, have a good weekend, everyone.
And get up off that couch and try to
take your umbrellas out tomorrow, because I'm going to the shore, so of course it's going to rain.
Well, you should be okay until afternoon, and maybe the weather is different down there, but Sunday looks worse.
Well, Pat, I'll be just fine no matter what.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. So goodbye, everyone. And,
so long.
See you next week.
Bye-bye. Farewell.
Well, they haven't come on yet, so we can still
we can play. Chat away until
we can chat
the
away until, they,
until the rewind hits.
Until the rewind
it's going to be hitting
hits
soon,
and,
so here it is.
Cuts us off. So in any event,
let's not have any dead
we'll
air.
We'll cut them off.